Oh, I'm sorry. I was just meditating on the deeper meanings of present value here on the grounds of the Temple of the Dividend Discount Models. Right. Okay. Let's get started on the my favorite version of the dividend discount model, and that is the discounted cash flow model. It uses present value of expected dividends and the present value of the expected future price to value a share of stock. So we're going to use the future dividends, yes, but we're also going to say to ourselves, hey, the value of the stock can be thought of as a future dividend or a future cash flow, to be precise. So we use the present value multipliers from the table. It's not covered specifically in our text, which is unfortunate, but it is really just a pure form of the dividend discount model with the present value of the expected price of the stock as our final cash flow. As I said, it's my favorite dividend discount model. And as with the other dividend discount models, this model is very sensitive to our estimates and our choice of required rate of return, and hence will be very far off the mark. So let's take a look at slide number 36. Example number one. Let's assume it's the beginning of the year, January 1st, 2021, just to make it easy. So we start on every beginning of every year. Pretzels Unlimited is currently selling for $22 per share and will pay $2 per share in dividends in 2021. PU, Pretzels Unlimited, expects to increase their dividends to $2.20 in 2022, $2.30 in 2023, and $2.30 again in 2024. We will be selling the stock at the end of 2024. That's a bug. I'll fix that. And we expect the price to be $27 per share at that time. Our required rate of return is 12%. So we see the next 4 years, 2021, 2022, 2023, 2024, we're going to get $2 in dividends in 2021, $2.20 in 2022, $2.30 in 2023, and $2.30 in 2024. Now, in 2024, we expect the price to be $27 a share, which we can think of as a future cash flow. And we're looking for a 12% rate of return. So the value of the stock is equal to the present value of the future dividends plus the present value of the stock when we plan to sell. So what we're going to do is we're going to use that table again. Remember the table from the previous presentation? Let's call it up on the screen. We expect a rate of return of 12%. Let me choose the, how do I choose the select? I can't see. Okay, there's a way to select. I can't. It's got the, I want to select, but it doesn't matter. 0.893. Remember that. Write it down. Remember that number. 0.797. 0.712. 0.636. Those are the present value multipliers for years number 1, 2, 3, and 4. 2021, 2022, 2023, and 2024. So we remember those numbers, and we wrote them down here. And then what we do is we multiply the $2 in 2021 times 0.893, and that's $1.786. The $2.20 we're going to get in the year 2022 times the 0.78797, and that's $1.7534. The $2.30 times 0.712, and that gives us $1.7376, plus the $2.30 times 0.636, which gives us $1.4628. So here's the future the present value of the dividends. And then we're going to take that $27 that we could receive by selling the stock, assuming the price is $27, which we know it's not going to be, times the last present value multiplier of 0.636. and that gives us $17.17. You add up all these together, and you get a present value for the stock of $23 and a little over 81 cents. Now, I know it's conceptually it's a little difficult, but the calculations are easy. It's just taking the present value multipliers and multiplying them by our expected future cash flows, realizing that they're probably not going to be what the future cash flows are, but we're, again, trying to predict the future, so we're putting our finger up in the air and seeing which way the wind blows. So the stock is selling for $22. We are hoping for a 12% rate of return. And if everything that we see in here comes to pass, we believe it's worth $23.81. Cool? Yeah, I think this is a very cool, very powerful technique. So now, it's a little cumbersome, though. Let us create a table format on slide 37. This is how you will see me create the problems on the worksheets and the like, because I just think it makes life a lot easier. Put the years 2021, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then put the cash flows. Well, here are the cash flows from the dividends, and then here's the cash flow from the expected price of the stock. Not the current price, but the price that we expect it to be at the end of 2024. There are all the present value multipliers. Notice that this is the same. These two are the same because it's the same time period. And then there are the discounted cash flows. I know that doesn't sound good. Discounted cash flows. What, are we going to the store and they're going to have a sale? No, not that kind of discount. Computing the present value is often called discounting because you are taking a future value and discounting it to the present. Get used to it. That's what they use in the industry. So here is the problem in the spreadsheet format. And I think it is much easier to comprehend and calculate in this format, yes? But let's simplify it a bit by adding the dividend in year number 4 to the expected stock price in year number 4. Because that reduces the number of calculations we need to do. So now we've got the dividend in year number 1, 2021, dividend in year number 2, 2022, dividend in year number 3, 2023, and then the dividend in year number 4, 2024, plus the expected stock price. And then we multiply all those by the 4 present value multipliers for years number 1, 2, 3, and 4, and we get the same answer. But adding the dividend in the stock price in the last year saves us a couple of manual calculations. But more importantly, it also allows us to use a special spreadsheet function to calculate the internal rate of return. The internal rate of return, IRR. The internal rate of return is a measure of what rate of return we expect to get from a series of cash flows, including both positive and negative cash flows. Someday, when you take an upper level or graduate level finance or investment class, you will learn how to manually compute internal rate of return, and hopefully you will not have some sadistic professor who will require you to calculate it manually more than once, because it's not that hard, it's just very tedious. That's why we have computers. We are simply going to enter the numbers into our spreadsheet and press the enter key, okay? In other words, if we required a 12% rate of return from Pretzels Unlimited, what do our numbers tell us will be our expected rate of return? We're shooting for 12%. We're hoping for 12%. But if we get these numbers, it turns out we're going to do better. An internal rate of return will tell us. Here is the spreadsheet. And for those of you who, there's a couple of spreadsheets on the web, I mean, not on the web, on the website, and then in Canvas, of course. And if you're familiar with Excel or Google Docs, it's actually very simple. You use the internal rate of return formula. The values is the block of the cell containing the cash flows, both positive and negative, and then you can leave this zero, and the computer will do its best to figure it out, or you put in what you think, your guess, what you think it's going to be. So, you see, we have to do year number zero. We have to do the initial outlay. The stock price is $22, so we put in a negative $22. That's a negative cash flow. It's an outflow, basically. We have to pay that. But then in this year, 2021, we're going to get $2. Next year, $2.20. The year after that, $2.30. And then $2.30 in dividends plus the $27 that we believe the stock is going to be worth in 2024. So if we put in these five values and do our formula, internal rate of return from B2 to B5, and if you've worked with spreadsheets, you know what I'm talking about. If not, you just bang around. They're not that hard. They're like big calculators. And then we put in our guess. We thought we were going to get 12%. The spreadsheet says, no. If you actually pay $22 and get this money back from your investment, you're actually going to get 14.5%, 14.51. And now in the face-to-face class, we would then run to the spreadsheet for Pretzels Unlimited. It's on the class website. We would show you how to use it. It's not hard, you know. I'll probably make some kind of thing up to see, show you how to do it or some commentary or something like that. Okay? So run over there maybe now or sometime later and play with the spreadsheet. Because also, it'll make the assignment easier to do if you learn how to use the spreadsheet. But it's not, all you need is a 99-cent calculator. But the spreadsheets make life a whole lot easier. So, make sense? Let's sum up here. This is a very, in my humble opinion, powerful model for companies that have been growing their dividends over time and have been fairly reliable with their dividends and their price increases. Realizing that we don't really believe these are the numbers. We sort of guess that these are the numbers and maybe they'll come true. Probably not. We don't know what the price is going to be in 4 years. We don't know if they're going to stop their dividends. They're going to continue to pay dividends. But some companies have been increasing their dividends for dozens of years. So yes, indeed, this is a powerful model. Now, our example number two on slide 41, genes are us. You know, biotechnology, new world, it's going to change the world more than computers and telecommunications, in my humble opinion, and it gives us a chance to tell a bad joke. What did one chromosome say to the other chromosome? Do these genes make me look fat? So Genes Are Us is currently selling for $21. It pays no dividends. It's not making any money. It's still working on that blockbuster drug that may or may not ever get approved. But we believe that in 5 years, it's going to be selling for $50. Our required rate of return is 13%. How can we determine if this is a good investment? Well, with no dividends, which model can we use? We can still use the discounted cash flow model. Because the value of the stock is equal to the present value of the future dividends, well, that's zero because they're not paying any dividends, but the present value of the stock when we plan to sell it. So we can go to the present value table, 5 years, 13%. Let's go get the present value table. Where did it go? Here it is. Go across the 13%, down 5 years. There's the present value multiplier. 5 years, 13%, 0.543. And that's exactly what we have here. $50 times 0.543 is a little over $27. So the model is telling us that if this company appreciates to $50 in 5 years, we're going to get 13% if we paid $27. But we only have to pay $21. So it's going to give us a better rate of return. Cool. But what do we know about companies that haven't paid dividends because they have never earned a dime and they still haven't got their product to market and it may never ever get to market? This is a very speculative issue, which is what Value Line would call it. We call it a speculative stock. This is the kind of company that could be $50 in 5 years. It could be 50 cents. And I'm not saying you should never invest in any of these companies, because these are the companies that can turn $1,000 into $50,000. Or maybe 10,000, a 10-bagger, as Mr. Peter Lynch calls them. And it can also turn it into $5. Exactly. So now you, dear students, are beginning to see the many, many different levels of risk versus return that you can search and seek out in the marketplace, in the market of stocks. And you're not just listening to somebody who says, yes, go buy Amazon. Yeah, maybe. Why buy Amazon? Well, let's see. What kind of dividends are they paying? How long have they been paying those dividends? Are the dividends growing? What do we expect the price to be in 2-3 years? Is it reasonable to make this expectation? This is what people are saying, the analysts, or maybe we'll discuss Value Line in a minute. But do we believe they're going to be right? What do they see that we don't see, or what do we see that they don't see? So now I believe that you have your eyes far more open when it comes to evaluating stocks to choose. And will that help you? I do believe it will tilt the odds in your favor, so that you will seek out those companies that are fairly reliable for the bulk of your investments. And then, yeah, maybe every once in a while you'll pick a speculative stock that, you know, could turn $500 into $2,000 or two. Okay, other valuation models that are discussed in your book, and there are many more: the residual income model, the free cash flow model, which the first one uses earnings in place of dividends. Well, that's fine. In fact, that's what a lot of people do. The better investing folks, they love earnings. They're not so excited about dividends. I love dividends. Dividends don't lie. And then the free cash flow model takes into account the non-cash expense items such as depreciation, which we've already made mention. And look, we're not going to go over these. We could later on, or you could seek them out on your own, because they're not the only ones, right? There are many out there, but you have enough on your plate for now. If you simply concentrate on the models that we use, especially the constant perpetual growth model, the discounted cash flow models, which are going to be on exam number 2, and going to be on exam number 3, and going to be on exam number 4, and going to be on the final exam, you are not leaving Business 123 without knowing how to do these two models. You concentrate on these models, and you decide whether or not they speak to you, and then you go look for other models and see what they say to you and how they help you identify, choose, monitor your individual stock selections. I think so. And I wish you all, dear students, the best of luck and success. I want you to be the best investors the world has ever seen. So there. Slide 43. Okay, Payano. This is all great. But just where are we supposed to get all this historical information anyway? And just who decides what next year's earnings per share, sales per share, cash flow per share, dividends per share, etc., etc., etc. are going to be? Let alone the expected price of a stock in 3, 4, or 5 years. Well, before the internet, this information was not readily available. You'd normally ask your broker for it, or you'd go to the library, or you would use one of the securities industry's trusted information sources. And traditionally, the most respected source was the Value Line. Now, we've already made mention of the Value Line. I think I've mentioned it often. And the reason is because it is now allowing you to go online and get some information, okay? Not all. It's still one of the most respected and trusted sources of data and analysis. And if it means anything to you, before I make an individual stock selection, I always consult the Value Line. If that means anything, it's up to you. But there are others. Actually, someone just showed me this one. I'd never heard of it, called Argus, and it doesn't look bad. It doesn't look bad at all. You get it free if you join one of the discount brokerage firms. So I never even heard of it. But I got to do some. I assume it's at the library, but the libraries are all closed. Traditionally, the value line was often the only source that many investors used for data analysis, along with the company's materials. You know, you go to the company and ask them to send you an annual report. Now you just download it from their website. It's not cheap. The normal one is $50 a month. There's a cheaper one. The normal one has 2,700 stocks, or is it 1,700? I think it's 2,700. The big companies. Then there's a cheap one for $20 a month, which is 600 companies. That's what we had at our library, but they canceled it when the library closed. And then there's an even more expensive one that has all the small cap and mid cap stocks, because that's a whole lot more work to do, the research. But what's very cool now is that ValueLine will allow you to download their sheets for the 30 stocks in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which for our purposes, educational purposes, is just fine. You know, but obviously you want to look at more than just, maybe not. Maybe you just want to invest in the bluest of the blue chips, as they're often called. But yes, you're going to, when the library's open, which is hopefully soon, you're going to want to trundle on down to a library that has the value line. On the website are, or at least it used to be, I think I might have taken it off because libraries are closed, but it's at the Chula Vista Main Library, it's at the San Diego Main Library, and several San Diego branch libraries. I'm not sure about any Chula Vista branch libraries. You're going to have to contact them, but if you're in Chula Vista, why not just go to the downtown one, the one that's, you know, by 4th and F. One study, which ignored transaction costs and the tax consequences, only used their timeliness indicator. It showed how you would have beaten the market handsomely over a 20-year period by just buying and selling stocks as they received and then subsequently lost their number one timeliness designation. As I said, I'm a big fan of the value line. Now, having said that, it's a sip from the fire hose, dear students. Slide number 45. Can you find their indicators, their future price projections, the historical data, the cash assets, receivables, inventory, other assets, the description analysis of the business, the historical annual rates, the insider institutional buying and selling, the amount of debt and number of shares outstanding, the company's financial strength, stability, price growth, and earnings predictability ratings? Ooh, dear students, it's a sip from the fire hose. And here is the value line for McGraw-Hill from the, I think, the 6th edition. They took it out in the 7th, 8th, and 9th edition. And the reason, I know why. I know why. I can imagine what was going on between the editors and of the book who worked for McGraw-Hill, because the book is published by McGraw-Hill, and the authors. The McGraw-Hill at the time, no longer now, but they owned the textbook publishing company, which is one of the biggest, you know, in the United States at least. I don't know about internationally, but. And they also own Standard & Poor's. Remember them? Standard & Poor's? Well, Standard & Poor's has a competitor to the value line. They have sheets like this. And I haven't seen them in a long, long time. But they're not as good. I'm not trying to be... I mean, I shouldn't say that because I haven't seen them lately. But 20 years ago, I thought, oh, this isn't that great. It's not very good compared to the value line. So I can imagine that the authors probably were asked by the editors, well, can we use Standard & Poor's? And the authors said, no, we want the value line. I don't know if that happened, but I'm just imagining it. And when you look at this, it looks like, well, dear students, it's again that onion analogy. We're going to start peeling away the layers, and much of it we just ignore, and we concentrate on the things that were important to us. And look at what the value line will do for you. They're showing you the past price performance, and then, you know, the cash flow, and what is this little button one? That's they call it the relative price strength. And you look up what that means. But here's the volume of the shares, volume of sales shares. But look at that. Here's the price in, what was this? This is, when was this? I forget when this was, but I'll tell you, when we go to the next one, it'll tell you when it was. But Oh, you heard it. End of 2009, duh. The end of 2009, it was selling for around $28.73. And they believed by 2012, 13, 14, that the price would be somewhere between $50 and $70. Now, I know that's a little hard to read. In fact, it's impossible to read if you're looking at it on your phone. But they're giving you a range. They're saying, you know what? This is what we think the price is going to be in 3, 4, 5 years. And these are the sales per shares. Here's the cash flow per share. Here's the earnings per share. Here's the dividends per share going back several years. And this is what we believe sales per share will be in 2014 and cash flow per share in 2014. You see, so they are doing the analysis and the predictions for you. You can use the Value Line's number. Yes, we believe, according to Value Line, that in 2014, in this case, we're going back in time, the price is going to be between, you know, 50 and 70. Now, remember, this is a logarithmic scale, which makes it a little tricky for people who are not, who are math phobic, but don't get used to it. It's not the end of the world. And then the next page has the most important thing, in my humble opinion, and that's the story. What's the story? Tell me about McGraw-Hill. Now, this is obviously only a few paragraphs, and one of the things about Argus that I thought was pretty interesting is they have far more written prose. And of course, you're going to do more research than just what is in the Value Line. You're going to download McGraw-Hill's annual report and read that, and then read any articles you might find about them and the like. But these guys, they sum it up pretty well. You know, they really sum it up. These shares are untimely. The near-term picture is concerning, but given recent earnings shortfalls, but the 3 to 5 year recovery potential is wide. So if you're willing to hold on for 3, 4, 5 years, which you are, dear students, you're in it for the long term, they believe there are positive signs coming for McGraw-Hill. And then look at the annual rates. Remember we talked about the sales change, right? Yeah, exactly. It's all here. Earnings per share, dividends. Yeah, dear students, it's a sip from the fire hose. Cool? So, let's put Value Line to the test. In late 2009, the price of McGraw-Hill was about $29. Their price prediction for early 2013-14 was in the range of around $48 to $68. And on February 15th, 2013, the price closed at almost $45. Not too bad, eh? Actually, pretty darn good in my humble opinion. When they made this prediction, by the way, at the end of 2009, the stock market had rallied from the depths of the 2008 and 9 crisis. But many people were still predicting the end of the world. This is the end of 2019, and they're looking at the world positively. And by the way, some of those people will always be predicting the end of the world. There's this guy called Porter Stansberry, and if you go on any of the financial websites, you're going to see his ads, and he's always predicting, the end is here, the end is here. See, I predicted the crash in 2008 and 9. I also predicted the crash in 2004 and 5 and 6 and 7 and then 2010, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. One of these years is going to be right. But now let's look at the Value Line prediction for, I trust the Value Line more than I trust Porter Stansberry. And go ahead, sue me, Mr. Stansberry, see if I care. Now let's look at the Value Line prediction for McGraw-Hill from the fourth edition. Let's see. This was 2005. Price was about $47. It split. That's why it's a lot higher than it was in 2009. And they're expecting it to be anywhere from 72 to about 85. What happened? How did they do in mid-2005? Well, their price prediction for late 2009 was in the range around $66 to $82. The price was hovering around $24 in late 2009. What happened? Well, it reached $70 in mid-2007. They were right on the money. Early, they were early. But then it started falling as the credit market started reacting to the home loan mortgage crisis. McGraw-Hill, remember, they own Standard & Poor's. They were the people who were saying these home loan mortgage bonds were AAA. No problem. The best of the best. You know what? They were all, many of them were based on lies. They were called liar loans. People were walking in and getting a $500,000 loan, and they couldn't afford it. Well, they could afford it for the first year because they were only charging them $1,600 a month. But then the next year, they charged them $2,000 a month. And the year after that, they charged them $2,400 a month. And the year after that, they charged them $2,900 a month, which is what they should have been paying in the beginning. And that's when the organic matter hit the ventilating device and all those bankruptcies and foreclosures and walkaways, strategic walkaways, which means the person just walks away from the home. And the price of McGraw-Hill, which owns Standard & Poor's, which said that these loans are great, plummeted as the home loan mortgage crisis spread to the entire financial sector in 2008 and 2009. Their mid-2007 prediction from the fifth edition was even uglier. But let's take a look at their early 2003 prediction from the third edition. And they, at that time, the stock was selling for $54. They considered it, they thought it was going to be worth between 90 and, say, 116. And in early 2003, the value line predicted the price of McGraw-Hill would be $90 in 2010 and 2005. Why so much higher? Because they split two for one. You have to divide these prices by two to compare them to the previous two predictions. Hooray for the value line! They were bang on the money. McGraw-Hill really reached that $120 level by the end of 2006, the split-adjusted price. I get a kick when investors trash the value line. They make mistakes too, just like everybody else. But I would sure love to see how those investors' long-term results stack up against the long-term results of investors who are using the value line. Who do you think would have the better results? Plus, when the libraries open up, the value line has these commentaries. What's going on in the marketplace as a whole? What do they think for stocks? They have these model portfolios, aggressive, income oriented. They're a class act, folks, and it pays you to, well, $50 a month. It's expensive. Or just go down to the library once the library is open, as I do, and just get lost for a couple hours and enjoy yourself. I know this is how I enjoy myself. We're very lucky. My wife and I, we live fairly close to the Point Loma Library where I live in Ocean Beach, but the Point Loma Library has the value line. So we go there on a Sunday afternoon, Saturday afternoon, and she is into historical novels. So she'll pick out three or four historical novels. And meanwhile, I'm there with the value line with all the books and all the handouts and with my laptop computer just banging away. That's fun. I hope you enjoy it too someday. Okay. Slide 55. The bottom line. Okay, Payano, once we finished all our valuation calculations, what should we do? Should we really place much value in our predictions? The answer is no, 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 no. Rather, we should hurl them into the vast ocean with the ashes of our dead pets and relatives, shred them into millions of little pieces and use them as confetti at our next party, or burn them in a huge bonfire as we dance naked around under the full moon, around a bonfire. Yes, we're doing these to tilt the odds in our favor. We do these calculations to, as I said, tilt the odds in our favor. They're not guarantees, folks. We know going into this that these numbers are just predictions that are going to be wrong. Instead of placing any significance in our predictions, after we have finished, we should ignore them and ask ourselves a very simple question. Do I really want to partner with this company? Do I want to own this company? Warren Buffett says, look, if you would want to own FedEx, if you could own that company, if you had enough cash to buy all the shares and make it a private company, make it your corner store, right? Your corner transportation company. If you'd really want to do that, go ahead, buy 10 shares, okay? But if you wouldn't, stay away. If you don't want that, if you wouldn't want that business as a whole business, then don't buy any shares. And of course, he's big enough, he buys the whole company. When you read One Up on Wall Street, which you're going to do, right, Peter Lynch, one of the best investors the world has ever seen, he said it this way. He said, look, after I've done all my calculations, and this is before the internet, folks, he had dozens and hundreds of these three-ring binders, and he would, you know, put all the information for a different company, cut out newspaper clippings and do his calculations and put them in the three-ring binder. And then he would hold up the three-ring binder, and he'd say, okay, this is FedEx. I am buying FedEx because of, they're one of the world's premier transportation companies. They have the most sophisticated computer system, tracking system, whatever. Or I'm selling FedEx because the price is just too, whatever. He would give himself the 30, 90-second story. And when the story changed, he said, you know, that's probably a good time to sell it, right? The story's changed. So you do that. After you've done all your calculations, throw them away and ask yourself, do I really want to own this company? And someday, hopefully, you'll be as big as Warren Buffett and you can buy the whole company. How's that? Cool. Slide 56. I love this quote from an obscure book that you probably can't find because it's out of print, but it's a wonderful book by Seth Klayman, written in late 80s or early 90s. The problem is that it is easy to confuse the capability to make precise forecasts with the ability to make accurate ones. Any attempt to value businesses with precision will yield values that are precisely inaccurate. We know beforehand that as we make these calculations, there's a 99.99% chance that they will be inaccurate. So why do we perform them? These calculations help us identify companies that are prudent, long-term oriented investments. They won't make us wealthy quickly, but they will make us wealthy, assuming the world doesn't end. To quote a very wise client of mine, I don't have to win big. I just have to win. I wish I had made up that. It's such a great saying. And that's been my philosophy, telling you beforehand, you know, my biases. I don't have to win big. I just have to win. And this assumes you have plenty of time to do it. Once you get to be my age, then you have to even more be more conservative than somebody who's much younger, who can afford to take more aggressive choices. Cool? I hope so. I hope so. Because we're done. We're done with chapter 6, the heart of our course. What are you going to do? Go back over, review it again, do the worksheets over and over and over again. The assignment is very similar to the worksheets, which is going to be, they're going to be exactly the same on the exam. Can I make it any clearer? And then there's a bonus assignment, which is now a semi-bonus assignment. It's worth 5 points, but if you do it, we'll give you 10 points. How's that for a deal? And it used to be we just used to make it a totally bonus assignment. But that was because you had to go to the library and identify, find the value lines. And it wasn't easy, especially for people who are working and they got kids, and getting to the library is a luxury. But now you can download the 30 stocks from the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And in fact, I have the Nike sitting right here. Let's show it to you. Here it is right there. There's the Nike. I just downloaded that a few days ago. And sure enough, they're looking at the price of $147. And they're saying, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 years from now, we think the price is going to be about the same. So we're not too excited. And they're not alone. There's a lot of stocks in this situation. Let's see what they have to say about the bottom. Come on, come on, come on, come on, go, 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 so we can see it. And make it bigger. Make it bigger, make it bigger, make it bigger. The good news surrounding these high-quality shares is already factored into their quotation. Nike is trading at all-time highs. In the meantime, the quarterly dividend has been hiked 12% starting from this period's payout. So in one way, we could say, for many stocks, folks, this is about as good as it gets. The next several years, in my humble opinion, I don't know when, I don't know how, I don't know. I might be wrong. They might double tomorrow, who knows. But it sure looks like there's a whole lot of stocks that are richly valued. And so we're going to have you do what we just did, the two worksheets for one of the companies or two of the companies that you can download from ValueLine, the 30 stocks in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Cool. Welcome, dear students. You now are rising gurus. You are adherents, disciples, initiates into the dividend discount models. I'm so proud of you. In our next chapter, we will take a look at projecting cash flow and earnings. Not really, that's what they call the chapter, but really it's financial ratio analysis. And what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at the financial statements. And here is where the accountants will have a little bit edge up on the rest of us mere mortals, because they've already dealt with balance sheets and income statements and cash flow statements. And don't worry, you accounting students, we're not going to do any journal entries, no trial balances. It's all done for us. See you in our next chapter, dear students. Thank you so much for being in our class.